This is ESPN Chicago, WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Presented by Four Winds Casino and brought to you in part by Nancy's Pizza and your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Chief, how you doing, bud?
Doing great. How are you, Pat?
I'm all right. Freezing a little bit.
Makes it tougher.
Wife's birthday tonight, so.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Mary. And she's a big fan of yours, by the way.
Everybody loves Mary. So feelings mutual.
All right. Yeah. I mean, did you see what Chief tweeted? I'm like, yeah. He's really not that funny. I mean, he is funny, but not that funny. You know what's not funny is the hockey team we're going to talk about.
Yeah. I was hoping that Calgary game would give us some positive vibes before this show. It was the opposite.
They've lost 3 straight, 9 of 11, and most of those 9 have been blowouts. There have been 4 more goals. It's like, we know rebuilds suck and they're painful, but when you're in the midst of it and you're beginning to kind of do the math and see where the prospects are, it's a little daunting. You know, it feels like it's never ending.
It does feel like it's never ending, and it kind of feels like it's never ending because it's been going on for so long already. Like, you had the end of Toews and Kane, which was effectively part of the tank the last 2 years, then you win the lottery, you get Connor, and everybody's excited, but the team's horrible, and then you hear about we're taking a step forward, you make some nice offseason moves on paper, and it hasn't worked out, and then you're looking at next year, where even if some of these young guys start to come up, they're still going to be young guys, and so you're going to be bad again. And then how long is it going to take, and do all these prospects hit? Because that never happens, no matter who the organization is. Not every draft pick and every first-round pick becomes a star. So you start to look around, and, you know, we at a time when this rebuild started, it was like, well, Leon Draisaitl is going to be available. Well, he resigned. And there's been a lot of these big names that you were hoping would be your Marian Hossa-esque type of piece to the puzzle. Those guys just very rarely get to market, and they're not getting to market. So it's where is the cavalry? Where's the cavalry coming from to kind of rescue this team and this organization? And if it's not from within, then it's looking like it might be nowhere.
Yeah. The free agent, like, if you've got a quality elite free agent, they're usually not getting to the market.
Right.
Mitch Marner might be. Now, I know he doesn't have that dog mentality, and people talk about the playoffs.
He's a great player.
I mean,
his production's undeniable. He's good both ways. It's just
on a team that is as devoid of offensive talent other than 98.
Yeah.
I could handle seeing him in the lineup.
I am totally. And I would say that I am warming to that idea after 18 months of what we've seen. Much more, I'm more open to bringing in Marner in January of 25 than I was in August of 25 or of 24.
Yeah.
So because you're right. Like, where is the offense production coming from? Where is the help for Connor Bedard? And if he's available, him, Rantanen, you got to take a swing at one of these guys, because the way things are going and have been going, it can't continue forever. Like, we got to have some talent in here. And, you know, I'm not closing the door on any prospects in particular, but, you know, Reichel was picked at, what, 17 overall? He was in the teens. He's not looking like a piece, you know? So sometimes first-round picks just don't work out. And I'm trying to, was it Mark McNeil back in, like, 2010? He was picked 18. I think he played 2 total games in the NHL. So sometimes, you know, draft picks and prospects, you know, they break your heart. They just don't work out. So you have to have a plan B. And I sure hope they have one.
The other thing, or you find that disgruntled player on another team.
A Jack Eichel.
Exactly. Yeah. We're hearing JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, those rumors. I can't imagine them letting both, moving both. That seems insane to me.
Yeah.
But I would certainly like either one of them on my team.
In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. It's crazy that they can't just sit down with a therapist, the two of them, that they both seem to hate each other so much, and there's so much bad blood, where, and it's public now, that we just have to trade one of these guys to salvage the room and have a direction going forward. But, yeah, I would like JT Miller. I would love Elias Pettersson.
So we want your calls, 312-332-3776. Where do you stand right now? It's been just a little over half the season. Bedard reached 100 career points the other night. We'll get into that and where he stacks up with other elite NHL players when they reach the century mark. But first, let's hear from Nick Foligno. This was following the latest loss the other night, and a game that they really were never in.
Listen, guys, it's not easy being in the basement. It's where we are. You know, we're at the bottom of the league, and the only way out is hard work and a grit and a grind and a mental attitude that you have to have to just be as tenacious as possible. Even if it's not in your DNA, you have to do it. And that's the only way you climb out of it. And maybe it's not for some guys, but for the guys here that are in this team, that are playing on this team, it's the only way you can do it. I understand you want Connor to score 4 goals a night. It's not going to happen right now, right? Like, it's not. And I hope it does, and it hopefully will down the road. But where we're at right now, it's a collective willingness to be as competitive as possible on each guy. And maybe it's out of character for some guys. Maybe it isn't something that they just do naturally, but it will benefit you later on. And that's where we have to get to, is everybody has to do it. Everybody. And it's not fighting. It's not running around hitting guys. It's like a willingness to go to the dirty areas, to go in front of the net, to knock somebody down in front of our net, to block a shot, to break up a play that maybe a guy screws up on. I mean, I commended Bedzie tonight, and Allen falls at the blue line, but he back checks and breaks up a 4-on-2. And I said, that matters, you know? And he's doing it. So it's on every guy to have that kind of mindset. And until we understand that, you're going to keep hearing me say the same dumb shit, and it's going to get old, and I'm going to get tired of saying it, and that's just the reality of where we're at.
He said that similar soundbite a half dozen times this year, but that was the most drained I've seen him. He's beyond frustrated.
The most pointed, I would say, too.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him. Like, he's a guy born and raised in hockey. His dad plays. His brother's on a good team in Minnesota. He knows what it takes. He was on that Boston team that won the President's Trophy. Obviously, they got bounced by Florida that year. But, like, he knows what it takes, and he's right. He's right. And they're not mean enough. And
they don't have enough dogs.
Right.
They need to have some players with some bite.
And, like, that quote, like, wouldn't you be embarrassed if you're one of the guys on that team and you have this guy who's 36 years old, has been doing it for forever, and it's like he's begging and pleading for his team to play the right way. And it's like, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
And, Chief, he says willingly that it may not be a part of that player's makeup to do it. Like of the 22 players that you have on your roster and of the 12 forwards, yeah, you'll be lucky if you find 5 that have bite to their game.
Right. And it... But that's the thing.
I mean, winning teams have more than,
right,
than 5.
But winning teams might have 5, okay? But they drag other guys into the fight. And it feels like Foligno is fighting an uphill battle where it's just like they can't. They brought him in to establish the culture, but it's not his fault. It's certainly not his fault. He's saying all the right things. I think he carries himself. I love the way he carries himself. They made the right choice making him the captain. But they just... it's just not in their DNA right now to be the type of team that's hard to play against. And that's what makes the rebuild so frustrating. And I've said all along, I don't care about the wins. I want to see this team have good habits and play the right way and be mean. And he's right. It's not about fighting and running around and burying guys into boards. It's about doing the little things right and, you know, knocking guys off of pucks and getting under sticks and just being hard to play against, and they're not hard to play against.
Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Rick in Knoxville. You're first up on the Hockey Show. How are you doing tonight, Rick?
Gentlemen, it's good to hear your voices. Always love the show. Appreciate you both. You guys both do outstanding work in your different areas of covering the team. So appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, just a couple things. This team is it's hard to watch right now. It's hard to, you know, want to sit down and watch the team for 3 hours. I think the best thing is, you know, PB with the pregame show and postgame show reaction. That makes it worth it. But I was just curious, like, it's never been done before, but I think more and more we're seeing that Andres is not the coach for this team. And I know that he's steady Eddie, but I've just seen no emotion or no passion behind that. And I know he's frustrated and pissed, but I just, like, it's never been done as far as firing, you know, getting rid of two coaches
in 1 year. Yeah, Rick, they're not going to make a second coaching change.
It would would be unprecedented. Yeah, it would be funny. No, just whack them all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Bears go through coaches quite a bit in a season, but...
How many people do you think they'd have to fire before they ask you to get behind the bench, Pat?
At least two more.
Yeah.
Hey, last thing, and then I'll hang up. What's more likely to happen? The Hawks make a big splash trade, or they end up with the number one overall pick again? That's what I was curious about. I think something's got to give. I think they got to do something big at this point. And like, is Kyle Davidson, is he desperate at this point? I don't think so, but I wonder. So anyways, I'll hang up and listen. And I get it that you're not going to get rid of him, but he's just not the guy to lead this next charge. So take care, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for the call. Do I think they have the appetite for a big trade? I think they're open to listening.
Yeah.
They're going to obviously be sellers. You'll see, you'll see the likes of Taylor Hall. And, you know, I don't know how many more. I mean, there isn't a really long. I mean, Ryan Donato, I'm sure there'll be interest in him.
I think Maroon will get, you know, locker room guy. Someone will give a seventh round future, you know, something.
And he's making nothing.
Yeah.
For, you know, as far as cap problems. But do they have the appetite for a big move? I don't think Kyle by any means is in a desperate mode at all. I think he's a very measured person.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be checking in with Vancouver and find out what it would take to acquire JT Miller, or if they really are going to move Elias Pettersson, what would that take? Yeah. Would it take, obviously it would take your Toronto first round pick from this year. It would take a center to send back their way. And it would probably take another piece, you know, maybe, and maybe you start looking at your roster, your prospect roster, and see where you have redundancy. And to me, that's on the back end.
Totally.
I mean, we saw today already a minor move.
Yeah. Isaac Phillips.
Yeah. Phillips got moved, and another Belarusian who apparently knows Levchinov. So,
love that.
Yeah.
So well, maybe buddy system.
That, you know, maybe it's and that's on the heels of Levchinov missing a meeting the other day and being a healthy scratch.
Yep.
So maybe who knows what's going on there. But what are your
Can
thoughts?
You drive this guy to the rink? Yeah. All right. You're in.
It's your job.
Yeah.
So what, like, do you think they have the appetite for a big move?
I think you're on the money where you said that they're listening. Maybe they'll make a couple of calls to take people's temperature, but they should be. Like we said, where's the cavalry coming from? They need more talent in here. You've had a million draft picks. Your draft picks inherently lose value the further away you get from the draft. So if you can strike while the iron's hot, while these guys still have some value, then I think maybe you should think about it. It's going to, I don't know. I hope so. And I wonder if Kyle, you know, there was a report that he went down and ripped the guys after the Winter Classic because it was such a disgusting display. I wonder if he is starting to lose a little bit of patience with both the guys in the room, and maybe he's looking around being like, hey, we got Ryan Green coming, but we also got the North Dakota kid with first round last year. Like, do we have some chips to push the middle here to get a real top six NHL player in?
Let's quickly squeeze one in before a break. Frank, you're up next on the Hockey Show. How you doing tonight, Frank?
Good. How about you guys?
We're doing all right.
Good. I listen to you guys all the time. Just my little feedback about this. What do you guys, I don't know. To me, I think we need a goalie. Mrazek's good. I'm not too fond of whatever his name is.
Soderblom.
Soderblom. He did step up a little bit. But to me, goaltending is where I think we need a big part. As far as Miller, maybe we could get rid of Reichel and add a couple more pieces to that just to get Miller. I'm not a big fan of our GM. It's just that, you know, I'm a Blackhawks fan since day one when I was a little baby. Parents put me in front of the TV, watch the Hawks. It's just, you know, it doesn't want to, I don't want to say breaks my heart to see them like this, but I think we have potential with our young kids to really step up and make this team awesome again. All right. I think we need to start from goaltending.
All right, Frank, thank you for the call. Yeah, show me a good coach. I'll show you a team with a great goaltender. And Peter Mrazek and Soderblom, they were among the best tandem before Peter got hurt.
Yeah.
And since Peter returned, he has not been good.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't been good in front of him either.
Correct. So Peter's been a good soldier. Mrazek, you know, he's been a good soldier. I was ready to completely write off Soderblom. He's been a little bit better this year. I really wish we didn't have this injury issue with Brossoit. That's, you know, is that a mark against Kyle too? Because he, you know, you signed him to a 2-year deal. He's had his second surgery.
Yeah, he had meniscus surgery in August. I mean, obviously,
pre-camp.
Before you sign him, you have the medicals. You know, he's going through what he's going through. I'm not going to put this one on him,
not that big of a deal, even if it is on him. But it's because, look, we were talking about a backup goalie anyways for on a 2-year deal. But yeah, it's disappointing, and goaltending is a big problem. You look at San Jose; they were proactive and they went out and got Askarov from Nashville when they re-signed with their starting goalie. He's been there for forever, and he was a big time prospect. And you know, I would have liked them to be in the mix for that. I would have liked them to be in the mix for Dylan Holloway and Philip Roberg as RFAs, the way that St. Louis did. And all those guys are, you know, playing at an NHL level that will be pieces for the future for their respective teams. And it's like, well, you got no stone left unturned. You got to be, and it's not like the money was an issue. I wish they were more aggressive this summer on some of these younger type players that were available.
What is going on with Seth Jones? We'll hear from the Blackhawks defenseman on the other side when the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino, rolls on.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM.
At 1000.
On the FM.
At 100.3 HD2.
On your phone.
Through the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Ryan Brandel, a.k.a. Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Number to get a hold of us, 312-332-3776. We are sponsored by Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. Seth Jones, a dash four against Calgary. Chief, probably the worst
game.
A bad
dash four.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just have bad luck. These were on him.
They were.
Yeah.
And the backbreaker was after Bedard makes it a 4-2 game on the power play. They still had 2 minutes of that 5-minute major. And he turns it over, and it's a shorthanded tally in the back of the net the other way.
Your brain just has to be better. That was one of the worst turnovers I've seen in the NHL in a long time.
He was asked about that turnover and hearing boos at the United Center.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. You know, we're obviously not putting the product on the ice that we want to, and I'll gladly take the blame for that. You know, that's what comes with the territory of the contract that I got, and I'm willing to stand in front of that. You know, it's unfortunate. you know, the losing obviously doesn't help any of that at all in the position we've been in the last few years. You know, started with myself, and we can always find a way to be better.
So, obviously, you know, the $9.5 million a year carries expectations. And actually, before he had the broken foot, he played pretty well this year.
He was playing better, but
still not anywhere near up to the expectation level that you have at that dollar amount.
Yeah, and I didn't really like that quote, because I had read the quote, and I'm like, sure, and then I hear it, and it's like, bro, you're not getting booed because of the 9.5. No one cares about the 9.5. It doesn't impact the cap. Sure, like, there's some maybe some expectations, but you were just awful.
Yeah.
You'd be getting booed if you were making league minimum. That was horrible. So, like, I don't want to hear that they're booing me because I make 9.5. You're getting booed because in that game, and I like Seth Jones. I was fine with that trade when they made it. I was happy about that trade when they made it. He has not been good consistently. And if he was good, it's not going to change where this team is in the standings that much. But he was bad. And like that, like, I don't want to hear about your contract. I don't know. You're not, that contract is not hurting the Blackhawks right now. It's just they're paying a guy. They're still well under the cap. He's not preventing them from going out and getting other people. It's not how it was with, you know, I it broke my heart, but the fans really turned on Seabrook at the end, and that was because it was like, hey, we got a big contract here and a guy who's not really helping us win, and fans got on him. They kind of turned on him on the end.
Yeah, and also because they were under such cap restraints that they were losing good players.
Right.
But again, I'm not going to fault a guy for
it's not
taking
his fault.
That deal. That was on Stan.
But I mean, he kind of volunteered that. Like, I'm making 9.5. It comes with the territory. Like, no, you're getting booed because you played terribly. Like, that's what it is. So maybe in the past that had been the case. You can't really say that after that game. And so that part I found that quote a little disappointing, we'll say. He was better under Luke in that system. His thing is that he's not good in transition defense. He doesn't gap up well. He's not a great skater. We saw some of that. I think it was the third goal where he was completely lost in transition. The gap control on him has always been an issue. He doesn't deny entries. He just kind of like waits till they get there, and he turns and pivots to go forward and just with his big frame ushers them wide, but they still retain possession in your zone. So that's always been his problem, and now he's having other problems. So there was the third goal, I think, where he just lost a battle in front and couldn't get it out. It's just like, come on, man. Like, just and
did,
when
did Luke did Luke help him earlier this year by hiding some of his deficiencies?
Certainly. And he had another quote that was like, you know, I'm not sure which system was better. We're losing under both. So it's like, hey.
Yeah, I mean, that's
true, but yeah. I don't want to hear that from you either.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It is disappointing, and they're not going to be able to move on from him. They only played him 16 minutes in that night for a guy who's accustomed to playing 25. I don't know what the solution is for him. I think he's going to be here for a while, so you better hope he just comes good. And you hear that quote from Foligno about digging in and playing hard and doing all those things, and you look at like the mental mistakes and just getting out-battled as a guy who's 6'4", 210 in front of his own net for loose pucks. Hey, Seth, like, that's you, man. That's like, you're one of the guys he's talking about. You're the veteran making the most. You have to bring it.
Back to the phone lines. Let's go to Tom in New Jersey. What's up, Tom?
Hey, guys. Happy Wednesday. Look forward to it each week. It's much better listening to this than actually watching the Hawks. I agree with your first caller. They're a very boring, bland, vanilla team. I watched Friday night. I tried to watch Monday night, and I actually went to Netflix, and I just had to turn it off. But I buried Seth Jones last week. I want to get on to a new topic. You guys always talk about the great 88, Patty Kane. And how much would it have hurt the Hawks to bring him back as a role model, as a leader for the team, instead of Taylor Hall, Pat Maroon, all these other guys? Pat Kane would have been a great role model for Bedard and the others on that team. He wouldn't have cost them much money. He's a true Blackhawk. And after watching him Friday night, he still got a lot left in the tank. What was the problem there bringing him back?
Tom, are you a plant? Because I've been saying that for forever.
Yeah, you've been on that basically since Patrick Kane exited.
I never understood it. And especially with the 18-year-old Connor Bedard coming in, and we've talked about it here, but when you see the media circus around him, you need another voice that people care about in the room to alleviate some of that. And who's meeting after a bad loss? Who's talking to the media? Probably the 36-year-old veteran who's been there before. And he can kind of, it's not going to be all on Connor. And then he can play the same pace of play as Connor. He's a high hockey IQ guy like Connor. It seemed to me the perfect marriage. And Kaner wanted to be back, and they told him no. And, you know,
And this was before they knew they won the lottery. So they had made this decision that they wanted to break from Kane and Taves. My big thing about, you know, to me, they're two separate arguments.
I agree.
Taves was not ready to play at that juncture. I know he says he is now or trying to make a comeback.
I hope he is.
I absolutely hope. It's an amazing story. He's going to be 37 in a few months here. God bless him. Hasn't played in, you know, almost 3 years. But we'll see what happens. Patrick Kane was the third star of the week last week in the National Hockey League.
It was seven point streak.
Big reason why the Wings won seven straight after the Todd McClellan coaching hire. And that guy makes a difference on the power play, too. They're
big time.
Humming.
Yep.
But they made a decision, and I always thought, like, Kane sees the game. The elite players, the Bedards, they see the game differently.
Yeah.
And we both, obviously, and anybody who's watched 88, realize he is a savant.
He is
different.
And he did become the leader. Like, he didn't have the C on his chest, but he was the captain of that team
for
a long time. And he held guys accountable. And, yeah, he can be hard on people.
They felt whoever they were going to take at the top of the 2023 draft, that player needed to not be in the shadow of a Kane and a Taves.
I think that was flawed logic from the beginning. Taves, I agree, was not going to help you win. He was not the same player and hadn't been for a long time.
And to be completely honest, his role as captain, he was not a captain
Correct.
The last couple of years.
For sure.
Because he was dealing with
a lot of stuff.
A lot of physical and mental things.
Right, which he's been pretty public about.
Yes.
So it was Kane. It was the only guy that made sense of those two or any of the core guys from before was Patrick Kane. And he almost made it, like I just said, perfect sense.
Right.
And so that one will always bother me. I think that was a very poor calculation on the part of the Chicago Blackhawks, and who made that decision, who knows, and what were the voices in the room. But you would have shielded some stuff from Connor. You would have helped Connor on and off the ice. And Kane is, he has like that cutting, sarcastic kind of, like, he ruffles some feathers. And there was this narrative that he wasn't good with young players.
Garbage. That is
garbage.
That is one of the worst narrative/takes I have heard.
But that's out there.
Who's putting that out?
There was a lot of people that were whispering that around the internet, coming from, we want to have like a different culture.
He made Alex DeBrincat.
He did. Dylan Strome
became. He tried to bring Dylan Strome along. He tried to bring Nick Schmaltz along.
Which didn't, that might be where some of this comes from. You know, like Nick.
But that might be more on Schmaltz.
I agree. Kirby Dach, a guy who, because I had heard this so much that I reached out to some of these guys younger players who had been here and left. Kirby Dach was like, no, he is the man. We all love him. So that whole narrative where it's like, hey, we got to start fresh because it's not going to be good for the young guys, that was always garbage. So on the ice, off the ice, he would have been helpful to this rebuild.
He would handpick every summer, the last 4 or 5 summers, a teammate to go with him to Belfry's camp, usually in Florida.
Yep.
And I do know there are a couple of guys that said no.
I know one for sure.
Yeah. And that's on them.
Correct.
A former Hart Trophy winner and a future Hall of Famer and arguably the greatest U.S.-born player ever says to you, hey, Chief, let's go down to Naples for a week. We're going to take part in this Belfry camp and other players like Kucherov and Matthews are there and all these different.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they're finding time in their schedule to go, you might want to go too.
Yeah, some guys want to get down to be about a scratch golfer in the summer. That's the difference. So, but yeah, I mean, Hartman went with him, Hinostroza went with him, DeBrinket obviously went with him. Like, he did that for a lot of guys, was bring him along. So, and then I always tell that story where I would go to the prospect camp back when they used to have it. And they'd be doing the drills and the scrimmages, and then you look on the other sheet at fifth third, and it's Kane, DeBrinket, and a goalie, and they're just a skills coach, and that's all they're doing. They're just working on stuff, getting better, and that was in August, or July and August. So, he would have been great. Big mistake by the Blackhawks there.
All right, Connor Bedard. There's a lot of people out there that have, and Chief, you got kind of wrapped up into the Blackhawks hive.
Yeah, I would say I was there's that old video of the Miami Hurricanes guy, Danny Boy Kane. I've been having a hell of a time online with these. It's like the cult of Connor.
He reached the 100-point plateau in his 112th game. I'm going to tell you where that stacks up with some of the other elite NHL players. But first, Four Winds Casino's giving away a $200 gift card.
Ooh.
Be caller number 10 to win now. You must be 21 or older and must live in Illinois, Indiana, or Michigan. Four Winds Casino giving away a $200 gift card. Be caller number 10. We're back with more on The Hockey Show after this.
The Hockey Show
with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
Call us or tweet your comments to at ESPN 1000, The Hockey Show.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Roll it out on The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino. Congratulations to our winner of the Four Winds Casino $200 gift card, Kevin in Gilbert, Illinois. You are heading to Four Winds Casino with a $200 gift card. Congratulations on that. And congrats to Connor Bedard. The other night, he reaches his 100th point in his 112th game. So that tied him with Roenick as the seventh fastest player to reach a 100-point mark in franchise history. The fewest games as a teenager to 100 points since Sidney Crosby, who did it in 80 games, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But then, to put it in further perspective, Connor McDavid needed 92 games to get to 100, so he did it faster than Bedard. Auston Matthews took exactly the same number of games, 112, to reach that. And then the reigning Hart Trophy winner, Nathan MacKinnon, needed 143 games. Jack Hughes needed 160.
Yeah, Jack Hughes got off to a very, very slow start.
So when you look at the fact that last year his winger was Phil Kurashev, who has been a healthy scratch basically 8 of the last 10 games or 9 of 11, and his only consistent partner right now on his line is Tyler Bertuzzi.
Mm-hmm.
On a team devoid of offensive talent, that he is among some of the greats as far as reaching 100 points, I think I'm more impressed when I factor in everything.
Totally, yeah. That it's a very impressive feat. Congrats to Connor. I will say some of those guys, the game's more open than it was when Crosby and Matthews were breaking in the league. So there is some of that, but the other part of that too, they're so bad defensively that he's not getting as much time with the puck and as many kicks at the can as some a team that is, even if they were even average, he would have the puck more. So they spend so much time in their own end and they spend so much time chasing the puck that it's remarkable how much he's been able to put up. So offensive talent is undeniable.
Let's get back to the phone lines. Joe in Green Bay. What's up, Joe? How you doing tonight?
Hey, boys. Thanks for taking my call, man. Enjoying the content. Patty, I'm a huge fan of yours, brother. Been a Hawks fan my whole life. I won't go into the details of being a baby and watching the game, but it's been a long time. Hey, man, I wanted to throw a couple thoughts out there. I'm actually really excited we get a chance to chat. You know, the Blackhawks have been in this, what do we call it, Chief? The never-ending rebuild or something along those lines?
Yeah.
And if you take a peek at the 23 draft, I mean, some names pop off at me like Oliver Moore, right? I was super excited about that additional first-round pick we got. Adam Gajan, I mean, he stood on his head at the World Juniors, and I want to say it was like...
He did twice. 2008. Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. He was the Czech goalie, correct? Or Slovak?
Slovakian, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I'm looking at these. We had 11 picks in 23, 8 in 24, and I understand the pipeline picks, and I get it that it takes time to develop these quote-unquote kids, but Connor coming right up, and to your point that you were just making, Patty, having no support whatsoever on this list of other unbelievable NHL players who have reached this milestone with solid – I mean, look at the team that Kane had around him when it happened. I just – it's such a head-scratcher to me that we're letting this talent be beat down game after game, and it's heartbreaking to me. And I just want to know what's going on with our pipeline. What's going on with the pipeline that we have coming up? Because it looks like we've had an unbelievable amount of picks. Can we package some up? You know, you want to ring the hall bell, right? Can we get a hall for some of these guys? Or what can we do to try to strengthen the pro club? Appreciate you taking my call, man. I hope you guys have a great one, and I really love this show. So keep up the good work.
Great. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. All right, let's get into that. And it also goes along with the Athletic put out a poll, I guess, this week of their ranking of prospects under 23. Corey mm-hmm. Pronman did this.
Yep.
And he has him in tiers like he does at the draft.
Yep.
And Macklin Celebrini was tier one, number one. Tim Stützle was in tier one as well. He was the number two player. And Connor was third. Mm-hmm. They were the only three in that tier
elite,
one.
The elite tier, yeah.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I mean, there. Who knows? Some guys might jump up. But, yeah, that feels right so far.
The other Blackhawks that are in this Athletic rankings of under 23 players. Artem Levchinov mm-hmm. chimes in at 22nd. He's one ahead of Brock Faber. Found that interesting. Kevin Korchinski is at 66. He's in tier 5. Sam Rinzel, who, when I talk to people in the Blackhawks organization, one of the most excited prospects when somebody talks about it, it's about Sam Rinzel.
He's big, rangy, is an unbelievable skater. The Big Ten Network shows a lot of college hockey.
Yes.
If you have an opportunity on a Friday or Saturday night to check out Sam Rinzel, you should do it because he pops off on screen. You always know when he's out there. He's great offensively. He's still skinny. Like yeah. I think he's listed at like 172 pounds at 6'4", which is almost hard to do. So he's got some weight to put on. He might even be, this guy's talking about the pipeline when these guys are coming. He might be better served doing a third year at Minnesota and being able to hit the weight room consistently during the week as opposed to traveling with Rockford all the time. But that remains to be seen. But yeah, he's an unbelievable skater. He might win the Hobie Baker. Like he's in the mix for that.
He is considered one of the top two or three defensemen in NCAA.
Yeah,
that's
Zeev Bium or whatever at Denver is probably the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kancerov, who was also taken in that 2023 draft with Bedard and Oliver Moore, he checks in at 73. Boisvert, 89. Oliver Moore at 91. The one thing that's absent from this prospect rankings is there's no Frank Nazar,
yeah,
who just turned 21 yesterday.
Right, and this is a U23 list, so yes, he would be eligible. It's actually, I'm looking it up, it's the second consecutive Pronman rankings where Nazar has missed the cut.
Okay, so he's anti-Frank.
He doesn't like Frank.
Okay.
Yeah, so, which is kind of surprising because, yeah, Frank hasn't been lighting the world on fire here, but...
But he was in Rockford.
He was arguably the best player in the American Hockey League, so... I don't know what the deal is with that. I think Frank Nazar looks like a pretty nice middle six player. I don't think he's a center long term, but that speed and some of the skill I feel like is undeniable. I mean, he's got like Lucas Reichel and Colton Dock above Frankie Nazar, which that to me seems like an oversight or something. Like he just deleted him from his list and forgot to make the update. So I was surprised to see that because I do think he will be, you know, he'll have a nice NHL career.
How do you feel? I know we don't like the last caller was talking about, you know, where are the players that they've drafted? Bedard is the anomaly.
Yeah.
That he goes and comes into the league at age 18. Mm-hmm. Most of these guys are like you're talking. They're physically not mature enough.
Right.
Their game shows signs of it, but you can't go from the Big Ten playing 32 games a year at 175 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and then jump to the AHL or the NHL and play with 220-pound guys who skate like the wind.
Right. And look, it does take certain guys a little bit longer. I would say a guy that comes to mind would be, we're watching the Minnesota game kind of with one eye. They're playing Edmonton. Marco Rossi had a goal tonight. He's a small, undersized player who is now 23. He's in his second year really full-time with the Minnesota Wild. So he had 40 points last year, total in 82 games. He's projected, he's on pace for 71. So it does, like, that could be the Nazar timeline. And Rossi probably took a little bit longer because Minnesota was good. It was hard to argue for him to be in the lineup because the team has always been pretty good the 5 years since he's been drafted. And now, so it's a slow burn, and now he's a very important piece on a very good team. And Nazar might be that, you know, that kind of timeline where it's like he doesn't really start to pop off until 2 years from now.
So when you look at what the early returns are on Levshinov and you size up Sam Rinzel and you like what you already have seen from Vlasic.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not giving up on Kevin Korchinski by any means. I think he needs to get a little bigger himself, but he's had an up and down performance
totally.
In Rockford.
And, you know, there is that old cliche in hockey that I think rings true, is that defensemen typically need 200 professional games. So just like not everybody's going to come up and be Connor Bedard, not everybody's going to come in and be Cale Makar. And so guys do take a long time to kind of get their feet wet and learn the pro game and learn what, you know, because these guys, a guy like Kevin Korchinski in the WHL, he's going to smoke that league. And when you smoke a league the way that he did, you do inherently develop some bad habits that aren't going to play in the NHL. So you kind of have, it's almost like you're breaking a wild colt. And like he's going to have to go through some learning curve, but his skating is so good that, and he's rangy and he's got the offensive mind and ability that I do think he'll come good eventually too. Is he a bona fide top four guy on a team trying to win a cup? Maybe not, but is he a guy who can run your power play and help you win in other ways as a third pair guy? Probably. So, but we'll see. It's going to take some time before we know what any of these guys really are.
Coming up on the other side, the NHL Central Scouting released their rankings, and their number one ranked prospect. And since the Blackhawks are in line for that, I'm going to share it with you and see if you would consider this person, this Chafer. Player. Yes. And with the redundancy and with a lot of D in the pipeline, mm-hmm. would you go that route? That's coming up next. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino, and we're sponsored by Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza.
The Hockey Show, Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans. Listen on the ESPN Chicago app from anywhere.
The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle, producer Kevin Zipak, Sean Graney. Thank you for all your work tonight, boys. And thank you for listening on the ESPN Chicago app as well. So the NHL Central Scouting put out their recent rankings. And with the Blackhawks looking at a number one pick, or at least mm-hmm. have the best odds for that right now, they have their top prospect as a defenseman, Matthew Schaefer, out of Erie in the OHL.
Yeah.
There's been some comparisons to, like, a Cale Makar, which, I mean, let's be honest, he's
only ever been one Cale Makar.
Yeah.
I have never seen a guy skate like Cale Makar, where he's so explosive and so twitchy, and it's almost like watching Allen Iverson on skates, where he just breaks people's ankles and is never out of control and never out of a play. If he's that, sure. then you take him. And if he's not, if he's a rung or so below that, you've drafted so many defensemen. You have Renzel, who we talked about, Labshinov,
Korchinski,
Nolan Allen, Vlasic, Del Mastro. Like, they have enough guys where Seth Jones is going to be here for a while.
He's
got 4 years left, so we'll see what happens.
Prior to his returning from injury and playing the way he has, I had heard there was some interest for him, and the Hawks can still have two salaries that they can pick up a portion of. And obviously they'd have to pick up a large portion of that.
Well, that would have to be next year, right? Because Bailey, they're still paying Bailey.
I think they get two more this year.
Yeah, maybe. And how much? You're going to pay
$5 million of it, $4 million of it.
Let's say it's $4.5 million because he makes $9.5 million, so he's going to make $5 million. You're going to do that for 4 years? Hopefully, in 4 years,
you got him. He's got 3 years after this year.
3 years. Okay. Well, I mean, you're paying Bedard in that window. You're paying some of these kids theoretically in that window. If you want to take a run at Randon, I don't know. That seems maybe. I guess I don't. I don't care. I really don't care. But it does feel like you have a glut of these defensemen, and unless Schaefer is literally a Cale Makar clone, I think you got to look at Michael Misa as like a two-way, a center. You got to look at Hagans, who's a center. You have to have some size. I mean, a Roger McQueen.
Hagans doesn't fill that.
He doesn't. He's not the size guy. But Misa is.
But then you sound like you're drafting size. You're drafting size and prioritizing that over speed and maybe some skill.
They have prioritized speed a lot.
Yeah.
So eventually you have to have.
Well, I'm with you. This team does not play inside the dots.
Right.
And there's a reason for that.
And you need to have some roster balance, and you have to be able to play more than one way. You're not going to be able to track meet everybody to death. So Porter Marton, he's not a center. He's a wing. He's over 2 points a game in the OHL this year. He's 6'3", probably 210. I've seen him projected at the top of some drafts. You've seen Hagans. Obviously, now you see Schaefer. Michael Misa will be in that mix. Roger McQueen, like I said, he's another guy. I doubt that the Blackhawks are comfortable enough with his skating. But he's 6'5", 200. He's been hurt this year, but he plays the WHL. He'll probably be a top five pick. So we'll see what they do. But eventually you have to draft guys and you have to build a team. It can't just all be lottery tickets and we'll figure it out later. We kind of saw that with Stan, where remember the year he had a three-year period where he took Boquist, Jokiharju, Ian Mitchell.
The little D?
They all guys who they're like, hey, why don't you guys go to Men's Warehouse together? We'll get one measurement. You're all the same guy. And we'll get your suits for the road. And it just, like, and none of them worked.
None of them worked.
It didn't. So, like, you have to be able to have different, you can't just have all speed guys.
It's the father's trip, the mentor's trip. So, right now, the Blackhawks fathers are probably somewhere on Broadway working their way up and down.
Good for them.
So hopefully the boys get tucked in early and maybe they get a win for the dads tomorrow night in Nashville.
I hope so. Nashville is another team that absolutely stinks. So that would be a good time to get a win.
Yeah, if they lose to Nashville, we got some problems.
Yeah.
That game is at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll see you on CHSN for that. That's going to do it for the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino. We'll see you next Wednesday.
You're listening to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.